You're listening to The Kylo Show, the podcast where we talk about how to keep your love on no matter what and why whole healthy families are going to save the world. And it starts right now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Kylo Show.
We're back.
We are, and we're so excited. This is episode 100.
Here we go.
And we're in the series of Kylo at Work, and we have none other than one of the probably most fun people I know. I've never worked for you, but I almost want to.
I know, I do too. I want to work for Eric.
This sounds like it's a blast.
I know.
And I want to be a boss like you. That's all I hear about is how phenomenal you are. So I'm so excited that we've got Eric Knopf here on another episode of our series, Kylo 5 at Work, I guess.
Yes. So. Yes, Kylo in the Workplace is our journey, and we are selecting the most outstanding people that we know that are doing a great job of creating a place that people want to be forever. You know, they just are going to want to, you know, thrive and flourish in the conditions that these leaders create. And Eric Knopf is a good friend of ours. He's a loving on purpose board member. We work together at the Jesus Culture School of Leadership. He's one of my tight guys on the Dragon Slayers. You know, he is just all around fantastic human being.
And I just hear about all those things.
Yeah.
Eric and I don't have much of a relationship except for you sound awesome.
Yeah.
And every time we're around each other on the board, it's I remember the first day you came in literally wearing bells on.
Yes.
Because that's what you said you were going to
do. He told us that
you came in.
I'll be there with bells.
No, Sherry said that. I think it's like, I'll be there bells on. I think Sherry challenged me to, I want to see it. And it's like, don't underestimate my ability to waste time.
Yeah. Jingle all the way. This guy.
I don't know where to put this, but I like it.
He showed up.
I like it. So
in bells.
It's awesome.
Yep. And that's just a little snippet of who this guy is.
So you're going to have fun, guys, basically. So, it's going to be a great episode.
Yeah. So, Eric, I know you've been through so many, mergers and acquisitions and building companies and all these different aspects. So I'm going to let you describe what it is you currently do and your role in it.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being here with you guys. What an honor. My life and career has been profoundly impacted by your guys' work and thought leadership in the space of relationships. And so unending gratitude and what an honor to be with you guys. I'm currently the co-founder and co-CEO of a company called WebConnects. And for those out there who've never heard of us, I'm not offended at all. We make event registration, event ticketing software, and fundraising software. And that's used for when people buy tickets for a conference or maybe a marriage retreat, a county fair, sports camp, marathon. So we make software that handles the payments and the registration for those industries. And so we have about 40,000 customers who use us. We're a tiny little sleepy team, but we power the events for Red Bull, for CrossFit, Toyota, Google, Passion Conference, Young Life, some Major League Baseball events, and some others. And so each year, our software processes over $1 billion for our customers. And we do this with a team that's about 1/10 the size of one of our nearest competitors.
Yeah.
My wife doesn't allow me to say we're a startup anymore, but we're about 15 years old. It kind of was a side project for about the first 4 or 5 years. And over the past 5, 6 years, it's just really ripped. And it's been incredible. Today, we have about 80 employees. We'll probably be about 100 employees sometime this next year. But largely, not only in addition to making great software for events and fundraising, we're on a mission to create the most generous, empowering, celebratory, and fun company culture ever. We have about a 95% employee retention rate, and it makes what we do in the software world just really meaningful and fulfilling because the tech industry is really a wasteland of transactional relationships and a lot of turnover. And even you're seeing it right now in the news, tens of thousands of layoffs.
Say that retention rate one more time.
95%
95% retention rate. Amazing. In the tech industry. I don't know if anybody caught that.
He's going to be getting some
I don't know if anybody
some
got
questions like, are you hiring? Are you hiring?
I will share all my secrets. No, amazing. And it's you know, and largely the foundation for which we stand upon, which is resulting all these results, have been how we've done relationships, largely in part to what I've learned through you guys.
Ta-da.
Hey.
I think one of the things I hear about, because I know a handful of people that have worked for you or have gone to work for you, and you have what seems like such a value to know your employees that I don't know is normal. And how have you figured out how to do that and be so efficient as well, and keep things going? I mean, you're continually growing, but it takes time to know people. And sometimes, like, people don't believe that you can do both. You can be a rock star team and get stuff done and have deep, meaningful relationships and connections to your staff members. How do you do that?
Yeah. So on the topic of company culture, most have reduced company culture down to beer on tap, maybe a ping pong table, an amenity, you know, funky furniture, things like that. Company culture is really about company connection. So to be a company that's about company culture, unless you're about connection, you're just about amenities and perks. And that has no staying power, because the next person who's got a better ping pong table can recruit your people away. So how we have our company culture is really about connection. And the depth of our culture is about the depth of our connection. So what looks like fun and shenanigans and, you know, on people's first day, we'll have, you know, we always throw parties on people's first day, because the first day for any person is the most anxiety ridden day of their professional career. And how every other job starts when you start a new job is you get there, the secretary is very surprised that today is the day you're starting. She thought it was next week. Your computer's not set up. Your credentials aren't there. Go stand in the corner like a buffoon and someone will come over and help you in about 35 minutes. And they're just as flustered. And so the first day for any person's, you know, existence at a company is just, it's so anxious, and it's the day they'll remember forever. And so we decide we're going to go all in on someone's first day. Mm-hmm. We do an all day company party. We've got a gift basket with all your favorite things. You come in with confetti, with people dancing with fake butts on that are like, you know, dancing in the corner. And we just like go for it. And then we do games and shenanigans, and we've got 3-man slingshots with, you know, frozen squid we're throwing across a field. And, you know, we subject these people to just a fun day of celebration. Think of almost like a church youth camp, you know, took over the office for a day.
Totally what I was thinking.
And what it does. Yeah. And what it does is it says to the person, like, we care about your experience, your relationship, your gift baskets, all of your favorite things. Like, we went through a reconnaissance mission to find about, is your favorite candy Skittles or the Snickers, you know, because we want people to know that we are deeply passionate about their connection, not only with us and the team, but that when they arrive here, it's not like you fulfilled a position. It's like, we did it, you know, we got you here. And it's this really mm-hmm. celebration, like, you know, can you believe it? And that you were desired, you were handpicked, you were chosen to be part of this. And we thought about every role in conjunction with everybody else. One of the interesting things that we do on hiring, I'm the last person who gets to interview somebody, because I'm probably not going to be the primary person that works them day to day. They're going to be working with other people. And so we let those mm-hmm. people do a lot of the screening and a lot of the hiring, because that chemistry and that connection that's there in that department is what's going to make them thrive. And so really? I have a veto card at the very end of it. But largely we allow this journey for people to build our team collaboratively based on connection, based on company culture. And it's just a recipe for success with us. And we just love it. And the results, you know, show for themselves. But company culture is all about company connection, and to keeping your love on and having brave conversations and being great communicators all along the journey produces great people who do the best work of their lives. And it's why we have a 10X result. And that's what we call our team, is we call them 10Xers, because one empowered person in community and connection has this 10X impact in their work. And so that's how us at an 80 person team, like, we have an impact of an 800 person team, frankly.
Yeah. So Eric, what are you doing to ensure that you're gathering powerful people into your environment? How do you sort that?
We do a lot of work in the screening process. Most job applications are, form submissions, attach a resume that you probably lied on, answer a couple like proficiency questions. I don't even look at resumes. That really doesn't matter because anybody can write anything they want there. We first take a step of an interview process within the application. Tell us something that you did wrong and how you cleaned it up. If you can't tell me something you did wrong and what you did to clean it up, then how can I entrust you and empower you if I can't trust you to clean it up if you make a mistake? And we tell our people that the light is green until it's red. We want you to be empowered. We're going to trust you. That trust is given, but mistrust is earned. So we're going to empower you to the fullest extent. And you're going to make mistakes. We know that. The goal is not to make mistakes. The goal is to have powerful, trustworthy people who can clean it up when they do. And we're going to back you up. And so all of our screening questions, and anybody out there who wants to know our screening questions, happy to give that to you. But we spend a lot of time just like, are you a decent human being that is trying
That's a
things, that has
priority.
made mistakes? So we spend a lot of time in that. The other secret we have is we try not to hire strangers, meaning that we incentivize our team to refer their friends, refer their community. And we have to have somebody in common, even if it's a couple layers removed. We kind of know you. They're not a perfect stranger. And so when we do that, you find groups of powerful, healthy people. They kind of start to run into packs. And so we incentivize our team. We give them a bonus if we hire their friend, and a really generous bonus too. And so they're incentivized into that. And so our company pool is all people who have got these loose frameworks of relationship that already bind them together, and they're already in conjunction with like healthy patterns. So
Love
that's been this kind of snowball that has been yielding great results for us.
Yeah, that's like hiring within
Yeah.
in a couple steps removed way, but that's brilliant.
I think it's phenomenal. I love that you're looking for powerful people from the very beginning. And also, I mean, it's not you necessarily that's looking, it's you've taught your team how to look for it. So somehow you've instilled
That's culture.
this place of this is what you look for. And I don't know if your whole team's read Keep Your Love On or any of that stuff. I mean, maybe they have because you seem to love
A
us, which is
lot
great.
have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, you don't enforce that on them because you're very empowering, but it's something that they all have high value for. So in the process of finding, well, who do I want sitting next to me? I'm looking for these qualities. It is something that you've clearly passed on, which is beautiful.
Yeah, and the trust is given, mistrust is earned.
Powerful statement.
That is not innate to a lot of leaders. A
Right.
lot of leaders create, I don't trust you until you earn it. You
Yeah.
know, so how are you sorting, filtering, developing that on your top tier leaders?
Well, our top tier leaders, they've been with us for a long time. Ashley, our COO, who's amazing. I mean, she's been with us for 12, 13 years. A lot of people are approaching 10 years with us. And so with our retention rate, we just have people who've been with us a long, long time. And it's really like they have a reverence of like the company culture is bigger than me. It's bigger than even our senior team. And every year we take people through our culture. We take them to the ingredients that build it, but we make sure that they feel the reverence of that the culture is ours to preserve and protect. Every single person has a job to do in keeping this. It's ours to lose, and it's not dependent upon one person. Companies think that they can have a company culture and just print a few things that they think are the company culture and put it on a poster board and like that's our company culture. Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, the company
No.
culture is what it is. No
It's
matter
not
what
a
you
printed
print,
statement.
yeah,
Yeah.
like a family culture, yeah.
Seriously.
So they all have a deep reverence for it. And to know that when we come to work as a person, we're bringing all of our life with us. We're bringing our marriage issues. We're bringing our issues with our, kids. We're bringing our issues with our in-laws. And so, we don't look at work as this kind of transactional, like, what can you peck on a keyboard? Ashley on our team also, she's invested deeply in people's personal finances, you know, like, and we've taken people through Dave Ramsey. We had five or six people this past year that got out of debt that started this thing like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And she's doing relationship or workshops. We're doing, you know, personal finance and all these things, because you as a human being, your personal thriving outside that happens between the 9 to 5 matters, you know? And so we want to equip you. We give each of our team members $1,200 in counseling that we reimburse, because your marriage does come into the work environment, you know? And so as we invest in those personal areas, then they're more healthy people. They're better communicators. We take people through a lot of trainings and workshops in terms of healthy and honest communication. We've leaned on Brené Brown quite a bit, you know, with Rumbles. And we use that terminology of like, we're not going to wait 6 months for me to like store up all my ammo and then go to war with you on all the things that, you know, have happened wrong. You know, we're going to clear stories. We're going to lead with curiosity. We're going to brave hard conversations, because that trust is so important. And so we've just been doing it for so long that now when people come into it, they step into this kind of like, wow, I have to rise my communication game, and I have to lead with an integrous heart and a brave heart, because the outcome of that is amazing. And we all have to protect that in order to keep it.
Well, this kind of begs the question, have you ever had to fire anybody?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, like who'd ever want to leave? But I think at the same time, not everyone's has the capacity to know
to cope.
And
yeah.
do what it is that maybe they've come into.
Yeah, maybe we hired poorly. We let somebody through
or
our
maybe
filter.
They got overwhelmed at, I don't know if I'm ready to grow at this level. Because it sounds like that's the expectation, is your willingness to grow. Maybe yeah. you don't have to instantly be at everyone's level, but that willingness to grow. So what if you find someone that just can't do it?
Yeah, this is like Narnia.
Transitions happen. And we approach those conversations with an open heart, because if it's not working out for somebody, they know it too. And there's a lot of things we're trying to redeem in the company culture at large. I mean, you think of how much distrust just and how much control manipulation exists in the workplace. Yep. It's transactional, it's manipulative, and it's coded in fear, right? It's like all the things that you guys Absolutely. Help people break free from. That's like the baseline for every single company. And so, you know, first is we're trying to flip that on its head. How do we have an empowering culture that isn't trying to control you, manipulate you, use you with fear? I had to repent to some of my staff, because it probably was 5 years into leaving the company that I realized, like, wow, my first few years, you know, it's monkey see, monkey do. You read these management books and it's like, you know, it sounds great, but you realize how much control and manipulation is built into what are good business management practices. And so trying to unlearn that and like repent to my team is like, I don't want to control you, because you can either have control or you can have influence, but you can't have both.
Yeah.
And so realizing like, okay, I want to have influence and to be an influential leader, I need to lead in such a way that's not trying to introduce control manipulation. So people, you know, we're all trying to unlearn that control manipulation that's always been present. But with people who maybe they jumped in and they're not ready for, or maybe it's just a wrong fit, we have those brave conversations with them about, hey, is this working? Like, you know, are you okay? And usually when it's not working out, the other toxic thing that happens in companies is they will ruin you on the way out. It's like, yeah. you're dead to me. And it's like this,
yeah.
it has to end with like knives and, you know, arms aimed
out,
at each
yeah.
other.
Blood, death, yes.
And so I tell people that have transitioned out, is like, hey, I want to help you get to the next level. It's not going to work out here, but let me help you get to where you need to go. And so I will write you letters of recommendation. I'll open doors. I've already researched job openings. I've got partners I can make introductions with. And so yeah. one of the things I want to do with running a company with my co-founder, John, is like, how do we bring people in, grow a great company, but transitions happen. How do we help them win on the way out where it's not destructive, where mm-hmm. it's not leaving wounds and scars, and we can part ways in an honorable fashion. It just hasn't happened. So I'm kind of prototyping it, or we've been prototyping it for the past few years. It's working out well, but you know, you have to have those brave conversations about, is this working for you? hey, it's kind of not working for us. What do we need to do to try some changes? People say, you know, hire slow and fire fast. I really don't like that. I think there's, unless it's like a really exceptional, like this person's dangerous.
Yeah.
But you've got a problem you're hiring if you've got somebody who's like dangerous, right? You know,
right.
You know, we're hiring really great people. People have got integrity. People have got character. And so to transition them out, how do we love them? Can we pivot, retrain, try again, adjust? We're going to give it a bunch of different tries because work is the sacred place. I mean, we will spend 40% of our existence at this place called work, you know? And so that leaves so much room for there to be this redemptive view of employing people, working together. So we try not to leave people as this kind of transactional kind of line item on the company. Tech companies, and again, it's all in the news right now, but I mean, tens of thousands of people being laid off. And they're like, well, we hired too fast. Tech companies in particular, they overhire knowing that people, laying off people is like plan 1A.
Wow.
You know, like how terrible is that you've built into your growth strategy that if it doesn't work out, we're just going to like lay off hundreds or thousands of people as like our primary strategy. And I just refuse to do it.
Yeah.
I'd rather grow slower and never have to be in a position where, hey, we made our budgets and forecasts wrong. We have to now have all these human lives, these kids in their schools, all your healthcare just upended. And it's just, it's tragic that tech companies are so cavalier. So we're trying to keep people as long as we can. If it doesn't work out, how do we do that exceptionally well?
What I keep hearing you say in different ways is you have such high value for who these people are, how they're created, the gift that God has given you, the opportunity to steward their season of life with you. Like it feels like you've almost taken on this personal responsibility, like, Lord, you've given me these people and I'm going to do all that I can to help them be successful. And in turn, they just say, Eric, how can we help you be successful? Like that investment, the exchange that you get. But it's just really, really beautiful to see the focus of the intentionality behind the relationship development is feels more like a kingdom, you know, agenda that you've got. Like, I'm going to love you because that's what Christ asked me to do. And I'm going to give you a paycheck. And if this works out well, awesome.
Yeah, totally. It does feel like the untapped ministry place is the workplace.
I'm hearing you're doing.
It does feel like ministry, and how when work gets better, it's like the first domino of a bunch of things that happen.
Yeah.
The most common thing we'll hear 6 weeks into someone working for us is they're like, the work's challenging. It's fun. I like the ping pong. I like the basketball and the Nerf darts. That's all cool.
But my sex life,
marriage is better. Yes. But they'll say like,
me.
Yeah. But they all say my marriage is better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people are bringing home into their marriage, their work stresses. Mm-hmm. They're bringing home the toxic relationships. They're bringing in all the manipulation and control they're experiencing. And they're like ramming it through the front door and taking it out on their wife and kids.
Yep.
And so as we try to redeem the workplace to be this empowering, like, we have a lot of fun, but we work hard.
Yeah.
But we're going to do it in a way that tries to empower you to do your greatest work in the greatest mm-hmm. community of people you can. So when you go home, you're satisfied, but also you had a great community experience and you're not bringing all that toxic sludge into the rest of your life. And so mm-hmm. people are saying, my marriage is better. I'm sleeping well, and I'm more patient with my kids. And so I'm eating better. I'm now starting to like work out. And so it's interesting how at least we're seeing that work is this redeemable area that is the first domino to all these other areas that someone's life can get better. And it does feel mm-hmm. like kingdom work. And we revere it as such. We don't call ourselves a Christian company. Though a lot of the vast majority of our staff are believers, but we do feel there is this kingdom ingredient that we're trying to live out and explore.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Fantastic. So leaders create culture.
Yep.
And when we look upstream, we find you. What are you doing to ensure that this culture is protected? Because you have to be the purest of the culture. You know, you have to you have to be the fanatic. You have to be. You know, I remember Bill Johnson. He'd say, "If you want your people to bleed, you have to hemorrhage." You know, I'm like, okay. You want them to cut a vein, you got to cut an artery. Like, wow, okay. So what is it about you that you are deliberately caring for, tending to, cultivating, that ensures that WebConnects is rocking in their culture?
Yeah, and to your point, I can't expect people to go to a place I refuse to go myself. Yeah. So I have to be setting the standard and setting the temperature for what we expect in terms of the company culture in every area. I have to set the appetite for personal growth, for humility, for discipline. I have to be that standard because no one's going to surpass what the leaders themselves expect themselves. What we do probably more than anybody else is we invest deeply into connection for the personal relationships of our staff. A couple of things we do. We do an annual company trip. And company trips are not that unique, but most of them are what might take like your top sales people, and they'll go to some place and people will come back with a lot of, you know, maybe skeletons in the closet and a lot of areas to work on their testimony. And it's not this honoring, you know, thing. And it's kind of reserved as like a bonus or a perk.
It's a reward. Yeah.
It's a reward. Yes. Thank you.
And it's a reward culture.
Yeah.
Correct. And they reward each other in this kind of selfish, not honoring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we do an annual company trip that's for all of our staff. Mm-hmm. Not only our staff, we want their spouses to come. Not only their spouses, we want their kids to come. And it's not like, and we pay for it all. We go out of country, usually for between 7 and 10 days.
Out of country.
And we take everybody.
Just a sly little out of country, not out of the city.
Oh, no, no. We're not going
out of state.
We're not going to, you know.
Okay. Again, do you have any openings? Did you say you were hiring?
We are hiring. Yeah, we have some openings. But, you know, we have a guy named Seth. He's got 10 kids, you know, and we pay for all the airfare. We pay for all the food. We give you a fun stipend and an entertainment stipend. And so we just like go all out, you know, like, and think about, you know, 10 kids, like,
yeah,
you are, it's some money, right? You
know,
it's
a commitment.
And we're like, bring them all, because when people's kids are having fun and they're doing laps, getting slushies and milkshakes and things like that, and to love our staff through the rest of their families, you know, the people's wives are connecting and now they're doing small groups together. Maybe they're doing trips together, vacationing, or the kids now have a bond. And so they're now sharing it benefits the company. So,
yeah.
We spend an unbelievable amount on this annual company trip. Last year we went to the Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. It is worth every penny.
I told you we need to be more like WebConnects.
I'm telling you, this is that 95% right here. This is what's happening.
Yes.
I only have three kids.
This is what's happening right here.
Because then now the families are now invested in this thing that daddy or mommy is doing. They know
they built relationships. Yeah.
They built relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're building
this past year, there was 10 people. I think there's 10 people this year who'd never left the country before.
Yeah.
Wow.
There was 3 or 4 people who'd never been on an airplane this past year, you know, like,
wow.
And you're giving these people these, you know, international experiences, and this is better than most people's honeymoons, you know, it's a great time. So our company trip obviously is a big thing. What we do, which involves connection across the whole family. We do staff retreats twice a year. We do one in the spring, one in the fall. That's just the staff. We go somewhere fun. We go somewhere warm. We do something called connection credits because half of our team is in Sacramento. Half of them are all around the country. We give every single person $500 to have an amazing, memorable experience with another staff member. Some people will go to maybe a ski resort and go snowboarding. Some people will book Disneyland tickets and theme parks. Other people will go to monster truck shows with their kids. Some people do surf trips. Other people have gone to Kentucky and done the Bourbon Trail. Doesn't matter to us. And so we are investing into other people's connection and fun with that, because what you do outside the office, it again, it builds that fabric that says we're going to have maybe some challenging things we're building, some challenging conversations. And so those challenges are totally offset by the connection and the fun that you're having outside the office that we're facilitating. It's why we do paid lunches in the office as well. Google and other companies that do this, like they do it for manipulative reasons. They want you to stay on campus because they know that you won't take your full hour. We do it because we want you to have the conversation with the rest of your staff or our staff that says, hey, what'd you do this weekend? What are some goals you're thinking about? We've got on all the tables, conversation prompts, you know, that the people can ask each other questions. So we do that. We have a guy's trip in the fall. We have got a girl's trip in the fall as well. And I went to the guy's trip and it was like unbelievable. We're all in Orange County. And again, the most the most shady thing that we did, like there's like 60 men. We're all like there away from our wives and families. The worst thing that happened is that we ate pizza at midnight, right? You know, it's like, and I just felt satisfied that and just felt really thankful that all of these guys are going to go back home to their wives, their kids, and they've honored their families that weekend. They didn't come back. They didn't overindulge in anything. Totally. So the short answer is we are just obsessed about how do we facilitate and invest deeper into connection with our team, because connection is really the rails upon which all your performance and all the fruit of your company comes from.
I was going to say, you've referenced multiple times the benefit from your focus on intentionality and connection, how it's influenced the marriages and the family dynamics, and then bringing these families together, you know, which obviously whole healthy families are going to save the world. We talk about this all the time. But you wrote a book called Raising Entrepreneurs, right?
I did.
And
just came out today.
Oh, okay. Wow. Congratulations.
Just today.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I just saw, I'm like, he wrote a book. That was literally what I said to my dad. I didn't know he did.
I brought
that.
It here. So, yeah.
I love it. So how does, I mean, you've got this deep value for family mixed in with such a business kingdom mindset. How do you blend the two? How do you have an expression of the two? And if you're raising entrepreneurs, what does that even look like, you know, being your son or your daughter? How does that, how are you propelling them to think?
Tell us all about your
please,
book,
Eric. Please, because I could use it.
I'll send you guys copies, or anybody who wants a copy, I'm happy to send you guys some. I actually cite Loving Our Kids on Purpose in there. One of the very first things in Raising Entrepreneurs, and really the book is a look back on my upbringing. I'm one of three kids, and all three of us kids are entrepreneurs. And I'm not the smartest guy by any stretch of any imagination there. I can't even do long division, right? Like I'm not smart. And so when people ask me, like, where did I get my entrepreneurial drive and passion? And I really believe it was fostered by my upbringing. And my dad was is a family practice physician. My mom's a homemaker. It's not like I have serial entrepreneurs for parents. My earliest memory as a child of like a career I wanted to do was to be the road construction guy who would hold the sign and twist it to stop or slow.
Smart.
And here's you know, my dad, a physician going through medical school, you know, he's got his practice, you know, and, you know, physicians are not typically entrepreneurs, right? Like they are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they want their kids to follow suit and have a real job, you know? And so my parents got me the orange vest. They got me the construction helmet and they took me out to construction zones. And so they invested into my dreams, even how foolish it would have been for them. Like they weren't embarrassed by it at all. And there's so many parents who are quick to crush the dreams of their kids because it doesn't make sense to them. Or like, you need to think about something really, you know, that you can really do. I want to be a cartoonist. I want to be a fly fisherman. I want to be like 100 different things. And my parents, they never criticized, you know? So there's 9 principles in the book. But one of the first things is develop a secure identity. You know, when your identity is not tied up into the thing that you're doing, you can risk and you can try and explore because your identity is never on the line. It doesn't change if I'm a son or daughter of God. It doesn't change if my parents love me or not. It's a thing I'm doing. And so I just looked at entrepreneurship as like, it's just, it's something I'm going to try and do. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't change who I am. And so that is the risk that so many entrepreneurs have, is that their identity is so wrapped up into this thing that if this thing fails, I'm a failure. Mm-hmm. And so raising up kids that are secure, that feel that they're empowered, but also loved no matter what they do, it's, you love them for who they are. That is the very first ingredient that unlocks them to be able to dream, to explore, to try, to fail, to pivot, to adjust. And so really that was like the very first thing for me that I believe that tilted the scales for myself and my other two siblings to become entrepreneurs. And so I reference, you know, loving our kids on purpose in the book, for how it would just dramatically shape me.
Is this book for children or for parents?
It's for parents.
Because the parents are so wrapped up in their child's performance to validate their own identity that they transfer that anxiety right into their child.
100%.
Yeah. Which makes it really hard to handle messes, because I think it's a direct reflection on
me,
how horrible I am.
I can't have you fail. I can't. Yeah, I need you to get an A. Yeah.
I know people who did not allow their kids to get jobs because they were embarrassed about their kids working, taking orders at a fast food place or a restaurant, or working retail. I mean, my first job was working at Levi's Outlet folding jeans. Let me tell you, I can fold clothes really well, but you know, I was 16 years old, you know, and working retail. And so my parents were all about it. And they're like, you know, you want more, go work more. Mm-hmm. It was this, you know, I loved dirt bikes at the time. And so I wanted to have more parts, accessories. And you can read all about the different things my parents did that helped me take control and charge to be powerful for my future based on what I was going to do to work.
Love it.
So I was working retail or working on my parents' farm. They embraced it. But I know other people who the parents withheld valuable experiences of being in the workplace because they were embarrassed.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's funny. My first job was at Burger King. So, you know, I didn't flip any burgers. I just took the orders. But it is, I've always told my kids, I don't care what you do. I just care that you are happy and you love it. And whether you go to school or don't go to school, it's about that you are continue to grow yourself if it requires growth and challenge yourself. But I want you to be happy. I don't want you to be complaining that you're stuck at some, you know, low level job because you didn't decide to grow.
We have a 17-year-old at Taco Bell right now.
Yeah, she is.
See how happy she stays there.
Yeah.
Are you living your passion, honey?
Totally. And that's what I tell them. Like, baby, this is work experience. This is you learning. All you're doing is learning. So let's learn as much as we can. And then you figure out when you're ready for the next one and what you'd rather have. You know, I think one of her, somebody that other than us kind of was like, oh, you know, why did you go there? And I said, who cares what they say? You have a job. You're putting gas money in your car because you're driving yourself there.
Yep.
This is a win all around. This I don't know what you have anything to be disappointed
this
about.
This is level one on the video game.
It's totally it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I love, again, you've said it, how you are paying attention to the individual person and where they fit successfully in your company. You're doing it with your kids. I mean, you're inspiring your employees to find that for themselves and their role in family, I would imagine. And it's just a beautiful place to have as, you know, a company in that we've got all these tech companies. I don't even know anyone that actually cares about the individual and their home life.
Yeah, totally.
Rather than you showing up on time. That's what I care most about. So it's so inspiring. I mean, I don't know. I've watched you from afar and I've heard stories, again, because I don't know you as well as the dudes do in the house.
It's true. It's true.
But what I've watched, which you go to your social media, you can follow Eric. He's lots of fun to watch, is your love for your children, your love for your wife is beautiful, which I'm sure working for you is something everyone sees. And you just kind of pose curiosity in all different ways. We should try this. I wonder what will happen. I don't know how many times you're experimenting with the most random things and you're taking people on the journey of, I wonder if. So leading with curiosity, I don't, I've seen from afar, just from your stories and different situations I've heard about. But I think that's such a fun component to being a business owner, that you're leading with curiosity. I remember when 2020 hit, you were leading with curiosity. And we watched that from the front seat in some ways, because that was our first staff or board meeting with you that day, which, but your, it was never crazy, but to watch you as, you know, selling tickets for events, all the events stopped. I loved your intentionality to us in that moment has always spoke volumes to me of, wow, this is a stellar human, that he's going to stay present to a commitment that he gave us. And again, I've only ever heard.
While he loses tens of millions of dollars, he's going to
it was wild.
Build a website for us.
That was so wild.
It was a wild situation. Cool. But again, you're leading with curiosity. You've come time and time again with your just pressing into what is God saying, what is God doing. And I've to hear how much your staff has followed you through that wild season, you know, to know how it's been fun to hear about. So
thank you.
I love it.
And we just have a few minutes left, Eric. And I just want to ask you, what advice do you have for somebody that maybe is considering this paradigm shift for the first time, listening to you and thinking, oh, I thought I loved people. Listening to this guy makes me feel like a tyrant. You know, so what would you throw out there as a easy first step to pivot?
Yeah. I will say it's a long journey. You have to be invested into it for the long period. You know, someone who wants, what can I do this week? And, you know, next week I'm going to, you know, prove if it will work or not. You've earned the culture you have, whatever your culture is. There might be people there right now thinking like, well, I've got a really toxic work culture. Well, you've earned that culture over time. And so to change it, you're going to have to earn it to be something else. And you're going to have to basically invest until it overwhelms the past habits. People and the culture that people have, that's going to be contagious. And so if you've got a bad culture fit, you're going to be stuck on that person. They will bring it down and keep you trapped. So one of the first things is like, you know, have I, the culture I have now, have I earned it? Yes, you have. Am I responsible for earning it the way I have? Probably so. And so one of the first things is, from the leader standpoint, go and repent. Like, wow, guys, I was a manipulative, toxic, horrible leader. I see it, and I'm changing it. And here's what I'm doing. Like for me, I'm an ideas guy. You guys know this. And so my greatest strength is to bring ideas. But you know what my greatest weakness is my greatest strength overemphasized. So I'm going to have an idea. I'm going to bring a semi truck and I'm going to unload all my equipment and I'm going to like bulldoze over you with all my ideas. And so that's my weakness. And so what I do with my team is like, guys, like, let me know if I have the bulldozer out, because I don't want to steamroll anybody. Mm-hmm. So you have permission to tell me when I've moved from my greatest strength on health. And so that's hard to receive when you do that. Or people come to you and say, hey, I know you have adjusted, you've embraced feedback. Let me tell you how this landed. Oh my gosh, I'm really so sorry. And like, I can't be offended. You know, like if you've got offense in you, you will perpetuate the toxic culture within you. So from a leader standpoint, you've got to be the first one to set the temperature to about face and say, this is where we're going to go. It's going to be a long-term investment, but we're going to go after it. But I think on a cultural level, being really strategic of who you let in going forward is going to be a huge strategic area. Agonize and spend a lot of time about who comes in. You can invest deeply in your culture by being actually a lot more stringent and a lot more detailed and intentional about who you bring in. And then the other areas are, how do we advance them as humans? If you just ask, what would surprise this person in their life, in their marriage? How can we break the mold? And ask yourself, what if, or what's the worst case, you know, if we do this, you know? And if you are asking those questions, you'll find lots of creative ways to start invest. But people's personal relationships or their kids are, and their marriages, those are like 10x points. You talk about like a video game. Mm-hmm. you want to score points with somebody, you invest in those relationships and those places, you're going to get this like 10x result. So it's, and in the past, we've heard of like a couple that they were going off to like a little marriage weekend. We called ahead to the resort. We want to upgrade their room and we want to send flowers and chocolates to the room on us.
Love it.
You know, or there was another person whose child was in a cheerleading competition. All the staff left for the day, made signs, went to the cheerleading competition and made buffoons out of themselves, you know, for this little girl. So these are areas that just like, they're going to score. So, you know, if you step back and think about how do I aim for their hearts and how do I do something that they would not believe, you will find unlimited ways to make an impact that just set the culture apart, and ideas will keep on flowing. But personal relationships, marriage, kids, personal finances, you start investing in those areas, you'll really start tilting the culture better, because as individual people get better, the culture will get better as well. And then the perks and other things like that. I mean, I've got a laundry list I could bore someone for hours for. So
I've seen that list. It's not boring at all.
And, no, I'm sure it's not. Amazing.
Thank you, Eric.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So fun.
Thanks.
To
thanks
have
for
you.
Being with us. But thanks for doing a great job. Mm-hmm. Thanks for doing a great job. I mean, it just is so refreshing to watch a leader at your level make the impact that you are. But to deliberately, you know, in essence, you're building soul ties with your team. These people are bonded forever. They will not anytime soon forget the experience that they've had being a part of your team. So congratulations and thank you.
Thanks for helping us expand that whole healthy families are going to save the world, because you're doing that on the business front. And it's just so
You're
wonderful.
Doing your part, bro. You're doing your part.
Absolutely.
Well, and thanks to you guys, you know, really for the thought leadership you guys have had within relationships, you know, in taking the principles of whole healthy families and then apply them into this world and sphere. It's been incredibly impactful. So thank you guys. And it's been great to be with you.
Yes. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Eric. And thanks everybody for listening in. Hopefully you took away so many great tips from Eric. Yeah. It's been powerful. And we'll see you next time on The Kylo Show.
Thanks for listening. Never miss an episode of The Kylo Show by subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch us on the Loving on Purpose YouTube channel. Don't forget to submit your questions and testimonies to thekyloshow.com. The Kylo Show is produced by Ali Armading, co-produced by Ashley Beck and Anna Hill, sound engineer and edited by Taylor Silk, and show promoter Christian Zamora. Don't forget, whole healthy families, gonna save the world.